Where do you see your career in 10 years? What are you doing now to help you get there? The sooner you start enhancing your skills, the sooner you'll be ready. That's why AARP has reskilling courses in a variety of categories like marketing and management to help your income live as long as you do.
That's right. AARP has a bevy of free skill building courses for you to choose from because the steps that you choose to take today will help you to love what you do in the future. And that's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Learn more at aarp.org/skills. In recent weeks, we've really focused on some ways that listeners can boost their income. So whether that's through starting your own side business and growing your network like Hala talked about, or when we talked with local realtor Alan about diving into investing in real estate, well, what better way to test the waters? While you are away, your home could also earn extra income.
That's right. Your empty space could be an Airbnb while you're traveling, because that's all you need to become an Airbnb host. It's a lot easier than you think, and you don't need to Airbnb your entire house. You could just host your extra spare room. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Supercharge your work decks with AI-powered Canva presentations. All you do is start with a prompt. You describe your presentation in a few words, and Canva presentations will generate captivating slides that you can then customize in seconds.
Canva presentations are designed for every workplace and every department. Whether you work in sales, marketing, HR, ops, and more, Canva presentations can generate any deck you want for work. Sales decks, marketing presentations, onboarding plans, you name it. Any department can save time on any presentation with AI.
Generate slides in seconds with Canva presentations at canva.com, designed for work.
Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I am Matt.
And today we're answering your listener questions.
Right, you know what day of the week it is, so we are here to answer your personal finance questions. We're going to get to whether or not it's frugal or cheap to avoid paying for a kid's meal. Always love a nice frugal or cheap.
Let them starve. That's frugal.
We're going to talk about affordable home security, buy now, pay later. We're going to discuss whether or not it is all that bad. Plus, we've got other topics to get to today, Joel. But first, man, I wanted to talk about Instagram, specifically. Social media. Like, we're always talking about how it's making us poor, basically. Right? Like
stealing our attention.
TikTok, not only our attention, but also our dollars.
Yeah.
But certainly, we're much more time poor, most likely because of social media. But like TikTok Shop, all the targeted ads. I've got an instance where social media has saved us a pretty big chunk of money. So Kate, she follows a food person. She's a chef. Or
influencer, maybe?
A food-fluencer, is that what you say?
Yeah.
I think she mills her own flour because that's something that Kate's and your wife,
it's
by
all the
way,
rage right now,
have been reading / watching all about. But no, this was, I think she's a chef, and she just talks about food.
Kind of like we talk about money. She talks about food.
Yeah. But in this one case, someone had reached out to her and asked her, like, evidently she's ripped. She's, like, really fit. And someone was just like, by the way, like, what do you do for fitness? And so she created a post about it and was just like, oh, I do these Peloton classes. And she's not sponsored or anything, but she's like, I don't have a Peloton bike. I literally just pay for the app. It's a monthly subscription in order to have access to the classes. And I freaking love the Peloton. It's like they've got cardio, but like strength classes as well. And that piqued Kate's interest. And she thought, you know what? I'm going to check that out because for multiple reasons, she was considering something that's maybe a little more convenient at home.
And instead of going to the gym.
Instead of going to the gym. Yes, exactly. And guess what? She freaking loves it.
Now she's ripped.
Yeah. Just overnight.
Yeah.
And yeah, she's just able to do it on her own time. She's always just a little bit rushed because she's trying to get out of there and go do something else, as opposed to she's reclaimed some of that commuting time. And we are reclaiming a ton of money because paying for, like, she's been doing.
Yeah, what's the Peloton app cost?
Burn boot camp or whatever.
Yeah.
And for 6 months of that, which is, by the way, that's the discounted price, right? Where you commit to like 6 months, it's close to $900.
Wow.
That is a lot of money.
$150 a month versus
yes.
What? Peloton 15?
It's like $12,
that's
man.
That's amazing, yeah.
It's only $12 and she loves it. And so anyway, all that to say, here's an instance of social media, her learning something that is allowing us to save a ton of money. And I think a big takeaway is just for us to reevaluate some of the different expenses that we have in our life, especially an expensive gym membership. Because we're like, you know, you've had a solid month under under the belt of...
Are you actually going to go?
Did you actually go? How many times did you actually go? What is your per visit cost now that you've been able to kind of incorporate it? Or maybe you weren't able to incorporate it into your schedule.
Makes me think there's probably one more tip, which is curate who you follow well. Because if you follow the right people... You'll learn. They'll point you in the right direction on helpful tips like this. Following the wrong people, they're going to get you to spend money in ridiculous ways.
Exactly.
So curate your social media feed, but I like that too, Matt. Reevaluate whether or not you're actually going to use the gym membership.
Yeah, and not just your gym. I mean, all memberships, all subscriptions, because that's what's
so about that regularly too,
nefarious about that is the set and forget it. It's great when it comes to investing. You know, don't even think about it. Just set your percentage of your paycheck. Don't even think about it. Yeah. Don't revisit that. But when it comes to expenses, that same inertia that's working for us when it comes to investing is working against us and parting us from our dollars.
100%. All right. Let's mention the beer we're having on this episode. It's called Bird in My Hand. It's a Saison from Piedmont Brewery. We'll give our thoughts on that at the end of the episode. But man, let's get to our listener questions. And
let's do it.
For listeners who do have a personal finance question, well, we'd love to tackle it on an upcoming episode. Just go to howtomoney.com/ask for the simple instructions. Really, it's just recording a voice memo and sending it to us via email, and hopefully we'll take it next week. But Matt, this first question comes from a listener who's trying to decide whether or not landlording is the next best step for him.
Hi, Matt and Joel. This is Tyler from Utah. I actually have two unrelated questions for you, but I'll ask the big one first, and if there is time, you can answer the second, as it should be a straightforward, simple answer. When it's time to move, how do you determine if it's better to sell your house or keep it and rent it out? We currently have about $142,000 left on our 20-year 2.875% mortgage. Comparable houses in the neighborhood are selling for around $409,000 right now, or renting for about $2,300 a month. If we sold, that would net us around $265,000, and if we rented, it would be an extra $1,148 a month on top of our mortgage payment. If we rented and put the extra profit straight towards the mortgage, I show it would be paid off in about 7 years, and then if we banked the $2,300 a month, it would take nearly 10 years before that adds up to the $265,000 in profit from just selling. So unless I'm mathing wrong, it seems like it's better to sell and profit the $265,000 now rather than renting for 17 years to make that same amount. Am I missing something? Secondly, I wanted to ask, when record keeping your medical expenses for future HSA reimbursements, do you need to keep track of the date of service or just when you paid the bill and its related receipt? Thanks for your time and advice.
All right, Tyler. This is such a great question. And by the way, for folks who are interested in getting into owning rentals, keeping the home that you currently live in when you move or when you buy a slightly larger house, that is often the best way to get the ball rolling here. Yeah. Saving up that next down payment is not easy, but the requirements for buying a new primary home are a heck of a lot chiller than if you're buying an investment property. Plus, you've already probably have a low interest rate locked in like Tyler does, making that move even more advantageous to hang on to that property as opposed to immediately selling it.
Yeah, not too long ago, Matt, you and I met with a friend and he's living in basically like a 2-2 with his small family. And he's like, I want to get into real estate investing. How do I do it? And it's like, well, how long are you planning on being in this house? Like, not too much longer. This is probably the perfect first rental property for you. Then save up, move into the next house.
Well, that's what we were encouraging, because he was talking about maybe them adding on to that house. And it's just like, oh, maybe instead of actually doing that. And this is before interest rates had completely shot up. But yeah, keeping that property as is would make a killer
for
rental.
Sure. And especially given the location that place
size
is
size of the home plus the interest rate, it's a perfect marriage.
Match made in heaven. All right, so let's talk about landlording. And specifically, the rate that Tyler has too contributes to maybe holding on to this home, right? 2.875 locked in, that bird in the hand is strong. So Tyler, if you're inclined...
Yeah, speaking of burden in my hand.
If you're inclined to become a real estate investor... It really is helpful to have that low interest rate locked in. That's going to make the numbers work even more in your favor, right? But this brings up, you know, one of the other really important considerations of buying versus selling. And that's if you're ready to take on the increased workload of owning a rental property.
100%.
The fundamental question is like, do you want to be a landlord? And some people are
doesn't really matter what the numbers show. Ultimately, this is it's kind of like a lifestyle question.
It's a gut check. And there's so many people out there, Matt, who they hear the benefits they've seen. They followed real estate influencers and they've seen people talk about how much money they can make, or boy, how it's buoyed their net worth over time. And they're like, I need to get into that. But do you want to get into that? And that it's really important to ask yourself that, because I've seen people half-heartedly do it, and those are typically the worst real estate deals. They don't make very much. They don't make as much sense. You're just kind of like going through the motions because you feel like you're supposed to. But Tyler, if landlording sounds actually kind of fun, interesting to you, it's something you want to proceed in, then it makes more sense. And part of that too depends on how far you're moving away, like whether or not you opt to kind of become a landlord and rent this property out. Because the truth is, self-managing can reduce the costs for you. And we think that it's a good way for landlords to learn the ropes. Even if, like, you are later on going to hire a property manager, DIYing it in the beginning is a great way to get started. And if you're crossing state lines, or if you're even just moving like across town in a major city, that can make it more difficult to self-manage. So if you're an hour away and there's a busted toilet and you kind of want to go there and get a look at it yourself, well, it's going to be really frustrating if you have to drive that far in order to do so. So I don't know. I would take all those things into consideration as to whether or not kind of moving forward with this as a rental property makes sense for you.
Yeah, that is the biggest question. Do you want a part-time job? And at times, it's going to seem like it takes a lot of your time when it comes to showing the property, getting new tenants in there, making sure that it's up to snuff, that repairs have been made. But then other times you might have a tenant in there like I have had for like years. I don't even know what year I think we're on like year 4 or year 5. It's a dream come true.
Yeah, you hear from them like 4 times
like
a year.
Never. Maybe. Yeah. And some of that comes down to the actual house, I guess, too, because if it's a house that needs a lot of work, then like the condition of the home plays into that, because you're probably going to have to be over there a little bit more or less. But then also, it doesn't even matter. Like, maybe it's a perfectly renovated home. Everything is like bulletproof. But some of that's out of your other factors that are out of your control, because it comes down to the tenant. Because you might have the nicest place and you might just have a tenant who's nitpicking every single thing.
Or even Mother Nature, because you just never know when
when a tree's going to bother your roof.
Well, something like that's going to bite.
That's true. But Tyler was asking if he was missing something kind of like on the math side. And yeah, it turns out there's a really massive potential source of revenue that you didn't mention, and that's appreciation. In 10 years, not only will that rental have been spinning off income for over a decade, but it'll also have hopefully gone up significantly in value. And I wouldn't expect your property to, you know, appreciate at the same rate that real estate has gone up over the past decade. But that home that's now worth $400,000, it could be worth like $550,000 in a decade.
Yeah.
I think that's a part of why real estate can be so powerful. There are these multiple modes of increasing your wealth. And I think appreciation is sort of like this gravy on top. But in all honesty, the increase in value, it's been far more powerful than the rent dollars coming in every month
for the properties
that we've experienced. But yeah, on one hand, as you're sort of weighing these two options, you're immediately taking into account the equity that you have there in the home. But then on the other option, you're only considering the cash flow. But don't forget, like, once that mortgage is paid off, you have a paid for house where you own 100% of that equity. So don't discount that aspect of it.
It's like owning stocks and only thinking about the dividends and not thinking about the valuation increase in the companies that you're invested in too, which is the main reason to be invested in the stock market.
Or the fact that somebody else is making payments to you in order to pay equity into that. They're paying the mortgage. And at the end of that period of time, that is now your asset, which you can choose to do what you want with at that point. That $265,000. Yes, you're accounting for it on one hand, but you're not accounting for it on the other hand.
And that's, I like how you kind of called it gravy on top, Matt. I feel like that's how I think of it. It's clearly the number one source of revenue from all my investment properties. It's the number one way I've made money. But I also like don't think about it much. I want my rentals to be profitable on like an annual basis and kind of keep them in good shape. But I know that in the back of my head, these things, that is truly what's making me wealthy, is the appreciation of those things over time.
Oh, yeah.
One more important question to ask, Tyler, is do you need the equity from your current home to buy the next one? Right. And the honest truth is most people do. That's the reason they sell their home and don't rent out the one they currently live in, is because they need the cash in order to buy the next home. But if you can save up a significant down payment for the next property, that makes it just so much easier to think about holding on to the current one as a rental. And that's the route we want to see people take. Because the recipe of buying a smallish, cheaper house, living in it for a couple years, saving up a down payment for the next purchase in order to buy that slightly bigger house or whatever as your family's growing, that is a recipe for success, right? Keeping that current one as a rental then, once you've made the upgrade, it's something that I've done multiple times. I think it's a great path for small-time landlords to follow. It allows you to like dip your feet in instead of going whole hog. It's a way to essentially de-risk your foray into owning investment properties.
Yeah, and by the way, too, he mentioned paying down that mortgage sooner. Dude, with a sub 3%, again, we touched on how strong of a rate that is, 2.875. That's not something you want to rush.
No, pay it off as agreed.
You do not pay extra on that mortgage. That's a rate that you write off into the sunset with, and you take your time.
That's right.
You are in no rush. But something else that you want to keep in mind in this rent versus sell decision are the tax consequences as well. Because if you sell and you take that profit, well, right now you're going to owe zero tax on the gain that that property has experienced. It's a nice little perk of the tax code for homeowners. But once you've been renting that home out for a few years, well, that's when the 2 and 5 rule kicks in. Basically, if you've lived in the home for 2 of the past 5 years, well, you still retain that tax exemption, $250,000 in gain if you are filing as a single individual, $500,000 if you are married filing jointly. And you could theoretically rent out your home, let's say for 2 years, you could put it on the market and you could sell it and still pay no tax. But if you rent it out for 3+ years, well, then you're going to owe a 15% capital gains tax upon the sale of that home.
And that tax is factored in based on the purchase price, even though you've experienced a lot of the increase in value while you were actually a homeowner living in it. You're still going to owe tax on that if, like you said, Matt, that timeline stretches far enough.
That's right. So it's certainly worth considering keeping it around. Actually, have we talked about you possibly selling y'all's last home?
Oh, yeah. No, I don't think we have.
So, I mean, y'all are kind of like in like the early stages of that. But a big reason why, you can tell the story.
No, it's the tax code. Because
you're looking at the timing and you know that, like, all right, it's either crap or get off the pot. Right? Yeah. Basically, is kind of where you're at with that.
Yeah, I mean, we lived in it for 7 years and we rented it out for just shy of 2 years, and so we're thinking,
perfect timing, baby.
Now might be a great time to sell, and then because there's a lot of gain that we've accrued over the years that we're not gonna have to pay tax on. But if we wait too long, we're gonna be taxed on it. So
hopefully,
yeah,
it's exactly $500,000.
Yeah.
So because you don't want it to, if it's anything less, you're like, oh man, there's still a potential for appreciation. But anything above that, you're like, oh crap.
Well, and it just makes me think too that if you're gonna be a landlord, you either have that kind of short-term mindset, okay, I'm going to do it for 2 years and then sell, or no, I'm in it for a decade plus.
You definitely get to a point where you need to make a decision around that 2-year mark for sure.
So you can, I guess, Tyler, dip your toes in, give it a shot, and then say, oh, this isn't for me, I'm going to sell. But sometimes it's just easy to sell because all your stuff's in it, you can take pictures, all blah, 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 blah. And also, by the way, real estate has a lot of interesting tax loopholes to help you avoid paying tax, like the 1031 exchange, if you wanted to sell that property far down the road in the future.
Speaking of tax.
Yeah, upgrading to a bigger rental property. I was talking to a friend about that this weekend, Matt. He's done a lot of that as a part-time real estate investor, and he's crushing it. And the truth is you could sell that home, use the proceeds to buy another rental while avoiding tax on that sale. But while that's cool, it's not always easy to pull off the 1031 exchange, like gets a lot of press, but it can also be a little nerve-wracking to go through the process.
You've got a limited window of time to be able to pull that off. Yeah. Otherwise, oh, sorry, you owe us.
Yep.
The IRS, the tax.
Sorry, you still triggered the tax liability. All right, and quickly onto your HSA question, do you need to keep track of the date of service or the date you paid for it? Well, when it comes to HSA eligibility, the date of service is the important date because you want to make sure you are actually enrolled in that high deductible healthcare plan. In that the HSA was established in order for an expense to qualify. It's all about the date that you had the services rendered. But that shouldn't be a big deal, right? Because you might only be concerned with expenses that occurred right at the beginning or right near the end of that covered time period. But we would just say, save emailed receipts, take a photo of physical receipts, and then input that data into a spreadsheet. Very few folks, Matt, end up using the HSA to their maximum advantage. But if you are one of those folks, Tyler, who's willing to jump through those hoops, it can be this massive, massive investing win and tax avoidance win at the same time. It's one of the best accounts that very few people talk about. And I get that not everyone can use it in this way. Not everyone has so much excess cash that they can max out the HSA while they're also, you know, saving significant amounts in the 401k and the Roth IRA.
Not everyone is optimizing to the nth degree, but I like that you're thinking about it, Tyler.
Yeah, if that's your jam, though, and if you are willing to optimize to the extreme, you know, utilizing the HSA properly can make a massive difference in your future and your retirement nest egg down the road.
That's right. All right, we got more to get to, including whether or not we condone eating out with kids because it can be so dang expensive. We'll get to that plus more right after this.
Cachava is the all-in-one superfood shake made up of high-quality plant-based nutrients. It's got greens, superfruits, plant proteins, antioxidants, adaptogens, probiotics, and in other words, everything your body craves to feel your best. This is where Cachava really earns their 52,000 plus five-star reviews. It tastes amazing. It's creamy and smooth with just water, and it comes in five delicious flavors. You can choose from chocolate, vanilla, chai, matcha, and coconut acai. Cachava is offering How to Money listeners 10% off for a limited time. I've been using Cachava in breakfast smoothies in the morning recently. It's just so nice to pack in a bunch of nutrients early in the AM in a way that's satisfying and energizing. So if you want to optimize your breakfast, your workout shake, be sure to check out Cachava. Just go to Cachava.com/howtomoney. That's spelled K-A-C-H-A-V-A, and get 10% off your first order. That's Cachava.com/howtomoney.
You probably think it's too soon to join AARP, right? Well, let's take a minute to talk about it. Where do you see yourself in 15 years? More specifically, your career, your health, your social life? What are you doing now to help you to get there? Well, there are tons of ways for you to start preparing today for your future with AARP.
What about that dream job you've dreamt about? Sign up for AARP reskilling courses to help make it a reality. How about that active lifestyle you've only spoken about from the couch? AARP has health tips and wellness tools to keep you moving for years to come. But none of these experiences are without making friends along the way. Connect with your community through AARP volunteer events.
So, it's safe to say, it's never too soon to join AARP. They're here to help your money, your health, and happiness live as long as you do. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Learn more at aarp.org/wisefriend.
I'm guessing that a lot of listeners are starting to solidify their summer travel plans. We always like to get the families together, Matt, for a week at the beach every single summer. We've already got that trip to St. Simon's on the calendar. Pumped for that. But sometimes those vacations get expensive. So what better way to offset some of those costs than to have your home earning some money while you're away?
That's right. Why let it sit empty when it could be earning extra income? It's the financially smart thing to do. So think it through. Maybe you've got some extra space in your home, or maybe you have an entire house to host. Or maybe you're just going on vacation and your home is sitting empty. In every case, you can Airbnb it. You already have the space, so it won't be a huge adjustment.
I mean, the way I see it, if you're not using your space, you have two options. You can let it just sit there empty, or you do some optimizing and make some money off it. Really, if you think about it, you already have an Airbnb. You just need to start using it. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. All right, we're back from the break. We'll get to that frugal or cheap question in just a second. But Matt, let's actually get to a question. This listener is having some issues with a bank she's doing business with.
Good morning. This is Stephanie from Central Florida. I love the show. I have a question. I have a credit card and an auto loan through Capital One. I recently applied for a higher credit limit on my credit card. When I received my letter that they declined me, one of the reasons was pending legal action. I called to verify what this was. They told me I have an old debt through Capital One from 2007. So I have two questions. The first one, why didn't this come up when I originally applied for the credit card, which is a few years old? We just recently refinanced the car with them and it never came up. And two, can they legally still collect on that debt? And what are my options? I thank you both. I love the show. And I've been trying to do good, paying everything off, and I appreciate your input. Have a great day.
All right, Stephanie, thank you for that question. And we are sorry to hear this. This is no bueno. A nice little surprise little blast from the past.
Yeah.
To show up like that.
There's some blasts from the past that are fun. like when Encino Man comes on TV and you're like, oh, Pauly Shore, he was so good back
Encino
in the day, right?
Encino Man. Is that where he's like the caveman?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
I actually haven't seen it in a long time, but I would totally rewatch it.
What made you think about that?
I don't know. Just saying, but this blast from the past, not such a good
not
one.
Not so good. Yeah. Honestly, it seems crazy that it has not come up until now. And she's asking, so part of her question is, why was this something that they overlooked before? My guess is that Capital One is just such a big organization. It's an instance where, like, the left hand might not know what the right hand is doing. And when you're applying for a credit card, typically they're looking solely at their credits, at your credit score. But I'm also shocked that they then dug deeper when you ask for a credit line increase, which is typically like an automated thing. Like, that's something you can do typically from sometimes from the different card issuers, from like the chat box, where it's just like, I would like a higher increase. Which, by the way,
it's like someone dug through the files when she asked for that one request randomly.
Doesn't make any sense at all. And I was going to share a story, but maybe I'll say it for another episode of using a chat box to my advantage.
Okay.
But Stephanie, not totally sure why it is that this is something that has recently come up.
Yeah, but let's talk about kind of what it means for you. And so, like, what should you do about a debt that you have from all the way back in 2007? And we'll get to the legal side in just a second. But I guess I would just start it off by saying, if this is a debt that you can easily pay off, especially since it sounds like you do a lot of business with Capital One, you have multiple accounts with them currently, I guess I'd suggest paying off that debt completely. Let's say it's a couple $100. Why not just eliminate it?
Yeah.
Be done with it and kind of clear the slate so that your relationship with Capital One is good to go from henceforth. And so if it's more than you can afford, though, it's not smart to make any payment. Don't even pay like $10. Be like, oh, let me throw you a bone and pay you $10, because that could actually restart the clock on that debt.
Exactly.
Taking it from an 07 debt to a 2024 debt.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big problem, because then now you owe the full thing and they're going to pester you for it.
Yeah, partial payments. But even like depending on the state, like even acknowledging or even admitting the fact that that is the debt that exists shows activity on that debt. And so you have to be really careful with how it is that you correspond and talk about that previous debt with Capital
I would not
One.
Be like, oh, my current debt with you. I mean,
even
that kind of language could get you in hot water. And by the way, if you're not sure the debt is accurate, it would be a good idea to file a written dispute. The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau has a great guide on this that we'll link to. But
if it's totally illegitimate.
If you're like, I don't even remember that. I don't think this is legit. Like, maybe it's made up, because that happens sometimes.
Obviously, you don't know it at all because it's fraud. But it sounds like in this case, you're like, oh, yeah, if I kind of remember that.
Yeah.
But if you, again, were you to sort of reactivate that debt? Like, it's sort of like waking it from its slumber. It's called tolling the debt. It's
kind of like
told.
An Encino Man when he's like in a block of ice, right? They have to warm him up.
Yet again. Okay, so onto the legal side of things. Stephanie, we're not lawyers, but it's important.
But I did sleep at a Holiday Inn last night.
All right. Enough of you and your pop culture references from 10 to 20 years ago.
Sorry.
It is important to know what the statute of limitations are there in your state of Florida. Basically, what that means is that if a company you owe money to, if they snooze past a certain point, they lose. Legally, they no longer have the ability to sue you in order to get that money back, even if you technically still owe it. And in Florida, the statute of limitations is 5 years on credit card debt, which means Capital One, they lost the legal right to take you to court. Were they attempt to do so, it would just be dismissed.
They lost that right back in 2012.
Yeah, we're talking about nearly 20 years ago.
Yeah.
If they tried to do that, that case would be dismissed unless they could prove that there was recent activity on that debt. So again, don't talk to them about it.
Yeah.
It's just, we don't talk about Bruno level kind of stuff.
Okay, that's a current pop culture reference.
I was trying to get something a little more recent.
Nicely done. Yeah. Our listeners were abandoning this podcast in full force based on... thank you for bringing us back to relevance. Okay, let's keep talking about that, Matt. The debt can no longer be legally reported to the credit bureaus either. So this is really important. So this doesn't actually impact your credit score or your credit report, thanks to the Fair Credit Reporting Act, because that act specifically imposes a 7-year max reporting window. So this debt isn't impacting, it's basically something that Capital One knows about and that you know about.
They know about it in-house.
Nobody else knows
about
it.
Obviously, because they brought it up.
Yeah.
But,
well, I guess you and I know about it and all of our listeners too at this point.
Everybody knows about it.
Nobody else knows about it. None of these other financial institutions
What's your social security stuff?
that you might want to get a loan with, it's not going to impact you. You go to another bank to open a credit card to get a loan on a home or a car or something like that, and it's going to be like, this never existed. They're none the wiser. So this is good news for you. And again, it's not like they're reaching out, you know, asking you to pay this insanely old debt. They're just refusing to give you that credit line increase because of it. So I just make sure to pay your car loan off as agreed with Capital One, to pay your credit card bill on time and in full every month. And I just also make sure that I had a decent relationship with another bank in case Capital One starts getting a little frisky because of this debt and maybe starts to punish you in other ways. Just have another credit card somewhere else. Have a bank account somewhere else as well. Maybe one from another issuer, right? Like Chase or something like that.
Sure.
And it's unlikely that Capital One is going to make a stink about this 17-year-old debt, but better safe than sorry.
That's right. Yeah. And maybe we'll link to one of the old articles we wrote a couple years ago about the different credit cards that we keep in our wallet if you're looking for some of the different benefits that you might want to take advantage of with some of the different providers. But that being said, that doesn't mean you need to go and like cancel this Capital One card, because I'm guessing based on how you're talking about it, it sounds like this is a card and a relationship that you've had with them for a long time. So it's likely not only the largest source of a credit that's available to you, but most likely it's also your oldest line of credit, and you don't want to eliminate that. But Joel is here from a listener, and he has a question about a new expense as a new parent.
Hi, Matt and Joel. My name is Nick from North Carolina, and I have a frugal or cheap question for you. I have an 18-month-old son. Until recently, when my wife and I have gone out to eat, we would just have some baby food or something small like a banana for him to eat. It seemed fine to bring this food into the restaurant since he was just a baby and mostly eating foods that wouldn't be served at a restaurant. Over the past few months, however, he has started eating full meals and we have started ordering from the kids' menu for him. As any toddler parent knows, though, it is almost impossible to know whether he will finish the entire meal or not eat a bite before actually putting the food in front of him. It's not much money, but it still stings to pay $7 for a grilled cheese that doesn't get touched. On top of this, it's not a gourmet sandwich, but often two lightly toasted slices of white bread with some half-melted cheese slices in the middle, something that would cost under a dollar in about 5 minutes to make at home. So my question is whether it is frugal or cheap to make my kid his own meal and bring that into a restaurant. Thank you.
Matt, I think you and I can both agree the only real frugal answer to this question is always go out to eat at Costco.
We joke about the $1.50 combo. That is still literally something I have never eaten.
Yeah.
I'm judging
you for that.
We'll post little videos or pictures or whatever when you and I will go there on every other Fridays. We have pizza movie night with our families. We'll go there and we get two large pizzas, one full pepperoni and one half and half. The half cheese, half pepperoni.
Yeah.
But we never get the hot dogs.
You've never had the
hot dogs. I
get the hot dog in
occasion. You'll take your kids there sometimes.
My little dude loves hot
dogs. If you're shopping there on the weekends getting groceries kind of thing, which is, by the way, the worst time.
Oh, true.
It's a good Costco.
100%.
Dude, I recently went there like 20 minutes before they close on a night that it was raining. I had the whole place to myself. It was kind of weird.
Did it feel luxurious?
It's kind of spooky, actually.
All right. Well, if you're not prone to making just every meal Costco centered, then we'll offer our other thoughts, Nick.
There are other restaurants and food courts that you might want to visit.
Right. And it's true. Like, kids grow up, they start eating more, and you're kind of like, oh man, this is going to cost me some money. Mm. Some mornings, Matt, I'm fascinated with how much my kids put away. But then other mornings, they eat like next to nothing. And so that's part of the frustration, too, is they keep you guessing. And when you go out to eat, you're like, if I know you're going to eat this, I have no problem spending the money on it. But then if you're picky or going through a hunger strike, all of a sudden I just paid $9 or $6 or whatever for that kid's meal thing, and you're not touching it.
For making me make my bed, Dad.
That's right.
Well, dude, it's just expensive as well. Like, I remember transitioning from when Kate and I would go out and we're just paying for two meals to then, okay, now we're paying for three meals. Yep. Oh, now we're paying for four, five. Oh, we're paying for six meals now when we go out.
It's jarring.
Triple word score that, like, in the worst way possible when it comes to our entertainment budget.
It's the same thing when you book flights now as a family.
Oh, my gosh.
You're like, I'm booking six seats. And this gets absurd.
It's so painful.
That lap baby phase is the best.
Southwest Companion Pass, baby.
But is this frugal or cheap? I'm kind of torn. Like, I'm not sure at what age it becomes cheap. But it would definitely be cheap for us, I would say, to do this at this point because our kids are elementary school aged. Too late in the game for that. But at 18 months, I think if you brought some apple slices and half a grilled cheese or something like that, I think you could get away with it. But you're not going to be able to for much longer. And so in the near future, I think you're going to need to pony up to prevent yourself from being weird or really venturing into that cheap territory.
Yeah, I don't think they're there yet, right? Like, just showing up with a banana. And honestly, like, kids have different dietary restrictions and needs today. Like, no server is going to look at you weird.
Yeah.
Because then you'd be like, What? You going to say something about my kid eating his special food?
Same thing about the dog I bring in, who I say is a service animal.
That's right. Okay, so one option, I think, is just to let them eat some of your meal, because then I feel like, sort of like we're talking with Tyler about easing into real estate investing, this is a way to ease into figuring out what it is that your kid likes. Like, do they like French fries? Of course, they're going to love French fries. Do they like the edamame? Depends how much garlic there is. It's a 50-50 toss-up.
Or salt. Right? Salt.
Yeah, that's true. But, I mean, bottom line, like, we all know that portion sizes in American restaurants, they are large. They're often bigger than one person can or should eat. I think you could just ask for a couple small plates, and you could give your little dude a small helping of whatever it is that you're enjoying. I don't think that's cheap. Like, even some couples will split an entree. Kate and I, we do this often. I'm totally fine with that. I would be perhaps maybe a little more generous with my tip in that case, because it's like, well, they're serving two people. They're doing something a little extra for you. And I think that's a way you can kind of offset the larger additional cost of an extra entree with just an extra buck or two.
In the tip, yeah.
Which also makes me think about, man, okay, take that into account when you do have kids, especially multiple kids, because we're trying to teach our kids how to eat properly and how to be functioning adults out in a restaurant, but inevitably they're going to make more of a mess than you do.
Mm-hmm.
And so depending on how large of a mess they make, you might want to also increase the tip as well. But if you clean it up yourself, all right, back to normal tip. Because I think that's totally fine.
Yeah.
I think that's totally frugal. But if they're making a whole lot of noise, maybe, perhaps, they're disturbing other patrons, other diners at the restaurant. All right, go back to raising the tip.
It's
a fine balance.
Is your child causing tip commensurately?
That you have to keep in mind when it comes to going out to eat with your kids.
So, and part of that, Matt, I think at some point, you're also trying to teach them manners and how to behave in a restaurant.
Yeah.
And part of that is like, you know, watching their behavior, but part of that is also letting them order
and not throwing their food.
Yeah. And like, hey, what is it that you want? Like, letting them order off the menu, figure out what they like.
That's true.
Again, Nick's child sounds like pretty young, maybe not quite to that level, but that's kind of an exciting place to get to, even though you're paying for it. But
then you get to go to a Chinese restaurant where there's pictures and then he can point.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So I would just say, Nick, start budgeting more for eating out, or reduce how much you're eating out by once a month or so that he can start ordering his own food in the near future, like when he's ready.
Yeah.
And one other tip, Matt. Be sure to watch out for restaurants that allow kids to eat free on certain nights.
Oh, heck yeah.
There's like a taco joint, you know, right around the corner. And is it like Tuesday nights, kids eat free? And so that's a perfect night to go there.
Three Amigos, that one?
No. Taqueria Tsunami, I think is what it's called. Yeah.
Free kids?
Yeah. Oh, and nice. Like, you just Google like kids eat free in your area sort of thing. You'll come up with a list of restaurants typically that have that. Yeah, and so
there's plenty of mom, dad bloggers out there that are writing about where they can feed their kids for free.
And that's a way to, you know, actually get the restaurant experience, allow your child to order, not feel like a cheapskate, but hey, you're still taking advantage of the deal. So yeah. I like that as like a real happy medium, especially as your kid gets just a little bit older. They're going to need to order real food, and that's your chance to be able to get the real food for them, give them the full restaurant ordering experience without paying a dime.
Yeah. I think what you said about teaching them is so important here, because like, what I don't want Nick to hear is that, oh yeah, it's so expensive, you know, kiss your entertainment budget goodbye, but it's worth it. Like, I don't want you to shy away from taking your kids out to a restaurant. And I mean, we don't do it as often as we used to, but I mean, one of the things we've started doing, I think y'all do this too, right? But on each kid's birthday, they get to go with Kate and I on our date night.
Yeah.
It's just a fun way for them to see what it's like out there in the real world, where you have to behave and you're not allowed to just be totally crazy rambunctious. It's, yep. And just to see what it's like to go on a date. And you, like, my three oldest are girls. Like, I want them to see me like opening the door, and not because she can't open the door, but because I'm showing mom respect by doing it. Just, there's so many teaching moments, not only in like when it comes to like real life, but also, you know, how to hold yourself and order at a restaurant. Like, these are all great opportunities.
Look the waiter in the eye and place your own order or something like that.
Nick. Exactly. And by the way, don't forget too, if he doesn't eat all of his food, this is something you can take home. I'm all about leftovers. So take that food home.
We've heard this.
And whether it's making your kiddo eat that food or just you taking it to work the next day, frying up an egg, setting that bad boy on top of that quesadilla. Sounds good to me.
There you go. All right. Yeah. So there's hopefully a bunch of little pieces of advice in there, Nick, for you. Hopefully you're still able to go out to eat. Enjoy that with your family.
Bottom line,
without breaking the bank.
Frugal for now.
Yep, exactly.
There you go.
Okay, Matt, we got a couple more questions to get to, specifically from Facebook listeners. We'll hit those up, including one about cheap home security systems. We'll get to that right after this.
Cachava is the all-in-one superfood shake made up of high-quality plant-based nutrients. It's got greens, superfruits, plant proteins, antioxidants, adaptogens, probiotics, and in other words, everything your body craves to feel your best. This is where Cachava really earns their 52,000 plus five-star reviews. It tastes amazing. It's creamy and smooth with just water, and it comes in five delicious flavors. You can choose from chocolate, vanilla, chai, matcha, and coconut acai. Cachava is offering How to Money listeners 10% off for a limited time. I've been using Cachava in breakfast smoothies in the morning recently. It's just so nice to pack in a bunch of nutrients early in the AM in a way that's satisfying and energizing. So if you want to optimize your breakfast, your workout shake, be sure to check out Cachava. Just go to Cachava.com/howtomoney. That's spelled K-A-C-H-A-V-A, and get 10% off your first order. That's Cachava.com/howtomoney.
You probably think it's too soon to join AARP, right? Well, let's take a minute to talk about it. Where do you see yourself in 15 years? More specifically, your career, your health, your social life? What are you doing now to help you to get there? Well, there are tons of ways for you to start preparing today for your future with AARP.
What about that dream job you've dreamt about? Sign up for AARP reskilling courses to help make it a reality. How about that active lifestyle you've only spoken about from the couch? AARP has health tips and wellness tools to keep you moving for years to come. But none of these experiences are without making friends along the way. Connect with your community through AARP volunteer events.
So, it's safe to say, it's never too soon to join AARP. They're here to help your money, your health, and happiness live as long as you do. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Learn more at aarp.org/wisefriend.
I'm guessing that a lot of listeners are starting to solidify their summer travel plans. We always like to get the families together, Matt, for a week at the beach every single summer. We've already got that trip to St. Simon's on the calendar. Pumped for that. But sometimes those vacations get expensive. So what better way to offset some of those costs than to have your home earning some money while you're away?
That's right. Why let it sit empty when it could be earning extra income? It's the financially smart thing to do. So think it through. Maybe you've got some extra space in your home, or maybe you have an entire house to host. Or maybe you're just going on vacation and your home is sitting empty. In every case, you can Airbnb it. You already have the space, so it won't be a huge adjustment.
I mean, the way I see it, if you're not using your space, you have two options. You can let it just sit there empty, or you do some optimizing and make some money off it. Really, if you think about it, you already have an Airbnb. You just need to start using it. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
All right, man, we are back, and we've got more personal finance money content to get to today. And we've got our Facebook question of the week. This one is from Rob, and he wrote, "Joel and Matt always talk about how bad buy now, pay later is, and I get it. It's credit that can get you in trouble real quick. I've never used it, but I'm tempted, and I don't see the issue if I have the money to cover it. I'm looking at a large tech purchase, and splitting the bill over several months instead of one lump payment is appealing. I can pay for it now, but why? Is there really any harm in using this option?" And here's the kicker. Here's a key piece of information that he wrote. He says, "I pay my credit cards off each month, and I have no debt other than a mortgage."
Mm-hmm.
That's the game. That's a game changer
statement, right there. Important piece of information for sure for Rob to have revealed. And he's right, Matt, in some ways, right? He makes a great point here. Like, credit cards aren't evil. We don't think credit cards are evil. But the problem isn't with the piece of plastic that might or might not be in your wallet. The problem is how half of America handles them, right?
Sure.
It's that they don't pay off their bill on time and in full. It's that if you're not disciplined, it can lead you down a path that really sucks for your finances. It's the same thing with buy now, pay later. It's also not evil in and of itself. I guess maybe we talk about it, though, in more disparaging terms. It's possible to use it in a way that doesn't do harm to your finances. And if that's something you want to pursue, like Rob, go for it. You, in particular, because of the way you treat credit card debt, the way you treat debt in general, you could do this and probably not run afoul, probably not screw things up. But the reason we slam buy now, pay later and actually recommend credit cards when they're both financial tools that you could or might not be able to use properly is that one comes with significant benefits and the other doesn't.
That's right.
Buy now, pay later, just it's not enhancing your lifestyle, whereas a credit card really can.
Yeah, so on the credit card front, it's nice that you don't have to fork over your dollars at the point of sale, right? But that's not the main reason that we think they're great. It's not just delaying that purchase until the end of the month. It's that they also come with additional legal protections because of federal law. For instance, you aren't responsible for unauthorized charges. That actually I charged back a local, what's it called, car wash place. They were offering, it's like, hey, you could pay for this car wash, or for $2 less, you get the same car wash, but it's, you're paying for the entire month. And it's like, that's a no-brainer. Basically, they're offering a discount if you sign up.
Yeah.
Counting on folks not canceling, but of course, I made a note to myself to to email and cancel. So I did, and they responded and said, canceled. And guess what happened the following month?
They still charged
you. I was charged again. And so in that case, I guess I could have reached out to them directly and been like, hey guys, can you... But there's just an easy way to click dispute charge, and boom, was able to take care of that without having to actually pick up the phone and make a call. But then on top of that, like what we're talking about here are the additional benefits, and credit cards allow you to earn significant financial and travel rewards, of course, as well. What about buy now, pay later? They don't do any of those things. All you get is just the ability to pay in installments, and where you're not parted with that cash up front.
Yeah, so specifically for somebody like Rob, who is handling credit cards deftly, handling them incredibly well, hopefully earning rewards with every purchase. Think about this large purchase, Matt. This could be the perfect time to earn a significant sign-up bonus from a card, which could be a free round-trip flight, or maybe even better than that. It could be hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of dollars just by making that one purchase.
That's right.
So why buy now, pay later instead of a credit card when credit cards are superior in so many different ways, and all buy now, pay later is doing is prolonging the pain of payments? So I guess that's why we're biased against them, Rob. It's not that you can't play the optimization game and opt for not buy now, pay later, even if you have the cash to pay for that item in full. It's just that most people start to use buy now, pay later, and it gets out of control really quickly.
For me, that's the other biggest reason. It's not just the benefits. It's the fact that each one of those purchases, basically, it kind of like turns into its own credit card,
yep,
right? Like, on one hand, you have a single credit card that's easy to manage. You've got all of your purchases funneling through that, especially for folks who are younger, who are early in their personal finance journey. It can be difficult to keep up with all these charges, and all of a sudden, you've got these accounts and all these payments that you are responsible for items that literally you've purchased all across the internet.
Yeah.
Like, imagine if each purchase you made was almost like its own credit card. That's kind of how I see buy now, pay later, which is why it can, in my mind, it can just get so overwhelming. That's the other part of it that I dislike so much.
Yeah, just the record keeping of it all,
yes,
right?
Yes, exactly.
And the cons of buy now, pay later, they just don't come close to outweighing this minor optimization pro that you could use to your advantage. And so much of it does come down to your personal discipline level as well. If you say, no, I'm attracted to that offering that buy now, pay later has, and I'm super disciplined that I'll never use it in a way to buy more than I need. It's really just for this one purchase. But again, I would just caution you, Rob, think about how can you use a credit card to maximize rewards and protections for the item that you're buying, maybe an enhanced warranty protection on the electronics item that you're buying because of the credit card that you use, instead of opting to just spread the payments out. I think the credit card makes more sense. All right, Matt, let's get to our next one. This one is a Facebook question that listener Jeremy asked about alarm systems. He said, as we recently moved, we ditched ADT. Does anyone have any recommendations for other home security companies? And there's some good ones out there, Matt. This is something we haven't really touched on a whole bunch.
No.
But it's worth talking about because specifically ADT.
Because we like talking about stuff here at How to Money.
We talk. And so ADT is like the most expensive player.
What does it stand for? Do you know?
No, I don't.
Alarm, deterrent.
Technology?
Trespassers?
I don't know. So everyone recognizes that name. You've seen the sticker on people's front doors, that kind of stuff. But they use antiquated tactics and pricing. And there are just so many better options now. It's like maintaining AOL dial-up internet when
it does kind of feel like that.
Fiber coming to your door, right? So for a hot minute, SimpliSafe was like the only place to turn. Matt, I was a SimpliSafe customer back in the day. I love their product. The price was just right at $15 a month back in the day. And it was just like this sea change in the industry, and SimpliSafe just garnered more and more and more market share because they were pricing monitoring at a fraction of what ADT was charging.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, there were no ridiculous contracts. The monitoring system that you purchased could easily be moved to a new home, whereas ADT had all this like hardwire kind of stuff installed. And
you had to get the guy to show up there in person,
right?
Drill holes into your ceiling and run the special little rod through where he could see it in the attic through the insulation, and then pull the cord through. That's not something you want to have to
SimpliSafe
undo.
In what, 3 to 5 days, package shows up on your porch, you self-install in a matter of a half hour or something like that, and you were off to the races. So I think SimpliSafe is still around, still a great choice, and well worth considering, even though they've raised their prices. But there are other discounters now in the game doing similar things that are charging even less.
Exactly, yeah. In recent years, another great competitor has entered the mix, and that's Ring. The monitoring from both SimpliSafe and Ring will cost you about like $20 a month now. But with Ring, you save if you pay for a year of monitoring up front, so that's nice if you know that that's something that you want to take advantage of. But then you can decide whether or not it's frugal or cheap, but what about not paying for monitoring at all? Because if it's something that is important to you, sure, like we don't want to dissuade you. It's not necessarily breaking the bank, but these sophisticated systems, they can alert you instead of the authorities. And at that point, you can make the call as to whether or not it was just your dog barking really loudly and it triggered the glass breaks. And that's something else to keep in mind, because sometimes, depending on your municipality, depending on what city you live in, I got a ticket one time.
Yeah, the false alarm call.
Because, the false alarms that Atlanta started implementing. So sometimes it's better to know first whether or not that the police should be called in.
Yeah, and I don't want to deter someone who really wants, you know, home monitoring, wants like a full-fledged alarm system at their property and believes that that's going to keep them safe. I don't want to say don't do it, but I also want people to think twice. I think you're right to at least push back on that. Is it something you need? And is this cost something you need to bring into your lifestyle? And there are ways. Maybe the cost of the system is one thing you can easily justify, but the cost of the monthly monitoring is something you can potentially easily avoid because of the way technology has progressed. You can check in on your cameras, whether they're Arlo cameras or Nest cameras or whatever they are, super easily. Get those set up around the house, and then you feel like you're...
There's a bunch of different players now, like Uma, Wyze. I mean, all of these guys are offering something very similar, which is the ability for you to be in charge of your own home security.
Yes.
And they, like, honestly, they all kind of have pretty similar prices
when
it comes to the different equipment that they're offering.
And that same kind of model we talked about with SimpliSafe is what Uma and Wyze are implementing too, where it's like, hey, buy this stuff on our site. It's a pretty reasonable price. And then guess what? Instead of the $20 that Ring and SimpliSafe now charge, we're going to charge actually a fraction of that. So I think for Uma, you can, those systems start at like $150. So it's not very expensive. And monitoring is $15 a month. So they're cheaper. They also have the like self-monitoring, like you were talking about, Matt, is $6 a month. So it's a heck of a lot cheaper, but they're not going to reach out and call 911 on your behalf. It's at least worth looking into. And then Wyze, it's $9.99 a month for actually full-fledged pro monitoring, or $99 a year. And again, this is the ongoing cost that
I think that's multiple cameras as well.
Yeah.
So like I think, that's how a lot of these are set up.
So yeah, if I was,
got a couple of Wyze cameras.
Yeah. If I felt like I had the need at this point in time for full-fledged monitoring, Wyze is probably the direction I would go in, because I feel like their technology is pretty good. The price is right.
We're also connected anyway, especially unfortunately, to our devices, but it's worth considering. And granted, does it really help if you're in, because it's great to know, I guess, if you're away, but if you're in the home and somebody breaks in, is it really all that helpful to know that the police have been called? Like, really, like in my mind, what I want to avoid is having that happen in the first place. And so I bring that up because something that I think is underrated, and I think we've talked about this like maybe years ago, but the strike plates that you can install on your door. So it's not just about...
prevent the kick-ins.
Yeah, let's find a way to prevent this at all, because certainly, at least around here, any of the burglaries that were happening did take place when someone just would kick in the door. And like, I don't know, burglars don't like breaking glass. They don't want to cut themselves, but a swift door kick, like there is not much wood that's keeping that deadbolt from just completely allowing the door to open. And so Strikemaster, I think, is the name of the... But they're these reinforced plates, and they install
like
along
3 feet long,
the entire length of the door jamb, and it makes it like virtually impossible to kick in the door. And guess what? That's something you can like do. That's like a little weekend project.
Yep.
It's a one-time expense, and all of a sudden you've got a more secure home where you don't have to fiddle with any technology if that's not something that you're interested in.
Maybe that combined with a couple of cameras you install yourself that you self-monitor, and boom, you got the peace of mind without the price tag. The other thing you can do, man, this is what I've done. Doberman pincher on a metal chain in the front yard, and it just, nobody wants to come to my house anymore.
Classic.
Yeah, exactly. I keep him like half starved, and he's just rearing to go anytime someone walks by. I don't really recommend that.
No,
it's just a joke.
Although, I mean, I will say having a big dog, obviously pets provide many benefits, much companionship for a lot of folks, but as a burglary deterrent, I think they certainly work as well.
For sure. All right. So, Jeremy, hope that helps. There's it's amazing how the scene has changed in the past 15 years and even in the past five. So I hope you can save a ton of money going in one of these directions. Matt, let's get back to the beer we had on this episode. This one's called Burden in my hand. Not burden my hand, but burden. This is a Saison by the good folks over at Piedmont Brewery. What were your thoughts on it?
Man, overall, another solid beer from Piedmont Brewery. It had that nice farmhouse funk, had some of those Belgian-like flavors shining through.
Yes.
And as it warmed up, I felt like I picked up on more of an umami-like flavor. Like, it had this depth where I'm like, what is that? I can't describe it. It's not salty. It's not sweet. It's almost like I'm eating meat. It's got like this depth somehow that they're able to brew into this beer.
I think they brewed this with Wagyu beef.
That's it.
No, that's fake. Yeah, yeah. Fake news. But this was delicious.
You dig it?
I like a good Saison. Yeah. It's also one of those categories of beer that I don't drink as often as I would like. For some reason, it's just not my go-to. So I'm glad to have this one. It's a little dry, a little hoppy, funky. I love the well-roundedness going on in this one.
Yep. Fantastic. Glad you and I were able to share this one today on the podcast. But that's going to be it for this episode. Listeners can find our show notes up on the website at howtomoney.com. By the way, if you have enjoyed this episode, we would love it for folks to leave us a review over at Apple Podcasts, wherever it is that you happen to listen. I feel like we haven't had any new reviews in a minute. I don't know. It's nice to occasionally see one trickle in like every couple weeks.
Yeah.
Not sure what that means, that we haven't seen any good or bad. Are we a little too vanilla, straight down the middle? Do we need more extreme opinions, Joel?
I will say, if you have been listening...
Just piss some people off, would you?
I probably did this episode. Okay. If you do leave a review, if you've been listening for a while and you leave a nice review and you email us, I don't know, I might send you something.
Oh,
yeah.
No promises, but okay.
What I mean is selfies of myself.
At the very least, we'll respond and say
yeah,
say
we'll
thank
holler
you.
At you, of course. So
I think we respond to everybody who emails us.
We try to.
Yeah, we try
I
to.
I feel like we get to all of them.
The spam filter doesn't, yeah.
Leave that review, shoot us an email, and we'll figure something out.
Yeah.
No promises. All right, maybe we'll send you a home alarm system. But Matt, that's going to do it for this episode. Until next time, best friends out.
Best friends out. Supercharge your work decks with AI-powered Canva presentations. All you do is start with a prompt. You describe your presentation in a few words, and Canva presentations will generate captivating slides that you can then customize in seconds.
Canva presentations are designed for every workplace and every department. Whether you work in sales, marketing, HR, ops, and more, Canva presentations can generate any deck you want for work. Sales decks, marketing presentations, onboarding plans, you name it. Any department can save time on any presentation with AI.
Generate slides in seconds with Canva presentations at canva.com. Designed for work.
Upswell Marketing would like to remind you that when customers choose your small business, they're really choosing you. So focus on super serving your existing customers and let Upswell handle the pipeline generation of new leads and customers.
Upswell specializes in developing customized direct response campaigns and is now offering a no-obligation free assessment of your current marketing strategies.
Not to mention, new customers also receive 15% off their first order when they mention that they heard about Upswell on this podcast. For more information, visit upswellmarketing.com. That's upswellmarketing.com. When it comes to your finances, go for the credit card that's always there for you. With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night.
Yep, that means no more waiting for, quote, normal business hours just to get a hold of someone. We're talking real service from real people whenever you need it. Get the customer service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.